This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy November to you. This is a month in which many famous freethinkers and non-believers were born. For example, Pat Tillman, Marie Curie, Albert Camus, Edmund Halley, Carl Sagan, Turgenev, von Schiller, Kurt Vonnegut, Auguste Rodin, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Robert Louis Stevenson, Aaron Copland, Nehru, Margaret Atwood, Jodie Foster, Bjork, Voltaire, George Eliot, Scott Joplin, Anne Nicol Gaylor, Andrew Carnegie, Bill Nye, and Mark Twain. So who says that non-believers have not contributed beauty and art and progressive thoughts to the world? We've been very influential.
And we also work for state church separation. This week also marks the centennial of the birth of Vashti Cromwell McCollum. We've talked about her a lot on this show in the past, the famous McCollum decision. She was born November the 6th, 1912. And today we're going to commemorate Vashti McCollum and that landmark Supreme Court case that she won, barring devotional religious instruction in the public schools, by playing a historic interview with Vashti. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the November 3rd, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. We broadcast in Madison, Wisconsin. We podcast around the cosmos, and we broadcast also in other cities, including Columbia, Missouri, Ithaca, New York, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Monterey, California.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we're a 501c3 educational charity. And we started off with two of us. I'm one of the original co-founders with my mother, and we have grown to over 19,000 members in every state, in every province, and we work to keep religion out of government. And before we continue the show, we do want to tell the East Coasters struggling in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy to please hang in there. And I do have a rhetorical question. Why are so-called acts of God always bad?
Good question. After we talk about the news, and it has been an eventful couple of weeks, as I said earlier, we're going to be playing some historic interviews of First Amendment defenders who have won landmark Supreme Court cases. Excerpts from the Freedom From Religion Foundation film, Champions of the First Amendment. That film, which was produced in the late 80s, highlights Vashti McCollum's legal battle, the McCollum versus Board of Education. And we're also going to hear from Roy Torcaso in that film, who won a landmark case in the 1960s upholding challenging a law upholding the constitutional prohibition against a religious test for public office.
So these are prime sources, and we recorded them for posterity. They're fun interviews, and we'll air that in the second half of Free Thought Radio.
And this has been an eventful debate month for me. I've done four debates, and will have done four debates this month. We talked about Dinesh D'Souza. I did my 100th public debate last week in Ohio, in Akron, Ohio. And when I mentioned that to the crowd, there was some cheering. Congratulations. My first debate was 1985, and I've been counting.
I was there at that first debate in Nashville,
as
we called it.
I know. It was in a church, and you and your mom and about four other atheists were huddled in the front row as I did my first debate.
And it was a church that had a baptismal, what do you call that, a fount?
Yeah.
Where they actually dip people in front of the audience. I had never been in a church like that. And they also, I think,
non-instrumental, yeah.
Non-instrumental.
There was no piano. It's a non-instrumental church.
It was a Baptist off spring of baptism.
No, it's the Church of Christ.
It's
a Church of Christ. Yeah, they're very big on baptism.
Yeah, so it was very strange to me to see this baptismal font.
Well, the first 10 or 15 debates I did, I was really struggling and nervous, and I think I did okay. But then I started to relax, and then last week in Akron, Ohio, I debated Professor Ducharme, professor of philosophy at Akron, the Secular Student Alliance group there. I also spoke at Kent State University and over at Case Western in Cleveland. And Ducharme, the professor of philosophy, he's educated at Oxford, got up and said that the evidence for a God is the fact that there are non-physical objects in the universe, including those non-physical objects include not only colors, but also mind. Mind is an actual non-physical object. And the best explanation for the existence of non-physical objects is the mind of God. And so some of the audience members, including some of his students, were gasping at what a silly argument he raised. But I'm doing another debate. I will have done one last week, Thursday, in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And then next week in
Oxford?
In Oxford, England.
Where you have to dress up in a tuxedo, right?
Yeah, it's a big black tie deal. So I and Michael Shermer, and we're going to go up against professor of philosophy and another professor of mathematics at Peter Hitchens' brother.
Peter Hitchens' brother is religious, so
yeah,
you're going to be two on two, right?
Two against two, that's
you
right.
You and Michael Shermer will be debating Peter Hitchens and...
Yeah, and then there's actually another two involved in the debate, so it's actually going to end up being 3-3, but that'll be... And I'll talk to you about that when I get back again, so...
And the topic of the debate you just finished in La Crosse, Dan...
Is religion a positive force in society? So,
well, I think that takes us right to maybe the first thing we want to talk about on today for news, and that is a way in which religion is not a positive force for society. The infamous remark of Richard Murdoch, running for the U.S. Senate in Indiana. This is part of his remarks at a televised debate on October 23rd.
And I came to realize life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
Now, shall we repeat that remark? It's all in the context of his being anti-abortion. He opposes abortion for any reason, including a woman who's raped. And he said, I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, it is something that God intended to happen. So apparently God is a mass rapist. And in fact, you could make that argument when you read the Bible.
Well, that fits with what you said earlier in the case of rape and unwanted pregnancy. Why are acts of God always bad things? For these women like Sherry Matulis, who was a member of our group, who was raped in the early 1950s, it turned out to
and
be
became pregnant and
a horrible act of violence against her.
And her story is in Women Without Superstition, which is the anthology I put together.
So Murdoch, trying to backpedal, said this week, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't unring the bell. I apologize that anyone might have been offended by it personally, and we've moved on.
We've moved on, but apparently, actually, many people have not moved on. That's one of those classic non-apology apologies, because he says, if you were offended, gee, I'm sorry, but he doesn't take back anything he said. He still believes it.
He believes it. He just shouldn't have said it in a public debate.
Or he's saying, gee, I'm sorry you were offended, but nothing's changed. He opposes abortion even in cases of rape, and part of his rationale for opposing reproductive liberty for rape victims is because if they do get pregnant, that's God's will. God intended that. And this is one of the many reasons it's essential that religious dogma mustn't be inscribed in our statutes and laws.
And who is he to say what is God's will? Does he have a direct pipeline? There are a lot of women in this country and in the world who know that they think it's not God's will. They think it's God's will for all babies to be wanted. Speaking of dumb remarks by politicians, here's another doozy that we had ready to roll in a previous show, but we ran out of time, so we can run it on this show. This is Georgia State Representative Paul Brown, B-R-O-U-N, Paul Brown, speaking about evolution last month.
But God's word is true. I've come to understand that. All that stuff I was taught about evolution and Big Bang Theory, all that is lies straight from the pit of hell. I don't believe that the Earth's been about 9,000 years old. And that's the reason is your congressman I hold the Holy Bible as being the major directions to me of how I vote in Washington, D.C., and I'll continue to do that.
So, how dumb? Very dumb. And Halloween has just passed, but this is scarier stuff, this guy in Congress with this level of primitive thinking, Bronze Age mentality.
That the world is only 9,000 years old. Wow. Well, he believes the Bible is sacred. Speaking of sacred subjects such as football, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's complaint about the Bible banners at high school football games continues to be in the news. Here's a great commentary by our good friend Matthew Rothschild, who's editor of The Progressive. This is one of his many refreshing daily commentaries.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I suppose in America, you can't get any more sacred than Texas football or any more exalted than Texas cheerleaders. So when my friends at the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison took both on recently, they created quite a stir. The case, and you may have heard about it, concerns the cheerleaders in Kunst, Texas, who before their public school's football games would hold up banners with Bible verses and references to God. Here's one example. "Thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ." A local Texas resident was deeply offended by this and contacted the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which in turn contacted the school board and explained that there's a little something called the separation of church and state in this country, and that the courts have ruled that school districts can't promote a specific religion in class or in its events. So the school board did the right thing and told the cheerleaders that they couldn't strut their religion in people's faces. But now the demagogues have taken over. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott and Governor Rick Perry, you remember him, have sided with the cheerleaders and wrapped themselves in scripture and have gone into court to overturn the school district's decision. They'll lose ultimately, but they just couldn't resist a cheap political stunt. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
And Matt is with The Progressive magazine.
And we'll have more news about FFF making news in the next segment. There's always a lot of controversy going on. We don't know why it should be controversial to defend the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, but it invariably is, and we've been making a lot of news around the country.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and after that we will hear our
Champions
of the First Amendment.
Some part of our being knows this is where we came from. We long to return. And we can, because the cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
And of course, that is Carl Sagan in his famous TV series, Cosmos. And that series, Cosmos, was a way for the world to know more about science. This week, November the 9th, is the birthday of Carl Sagan, who was born in 1934. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and now we are coming to some more news about FFRF making news. And last week we had a visit from a very charming reporter and cameraman team from Knoxville. They said they wanted to find out what FFRF was all about after we've had a major complaint there about Christian prayers at graduation and football games in Knoxville at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. We stopped that at UTC, Chattanooga, but we were not able to stop it at Knoxville. We may be looking at a lawsuit there. And so this is...
they apparently ran something, a whole segment in Knoxville.
Yeah, and this is just an excerpt.
We'll
hope to get the whole thing later, but it's WTVC9 Chattanooga, excerpting part of that report.
Now we go to a closer look inside an organization based in Wisconsin that's challenging many local schools about who can pray, when, and where. Their most recent local target, Walker County Schools.
Alexis Zotos traveled to Madison, Wisconsin to meet those from behind Freedom From Religion Foundation.
We're not barging into churches. We're not dragging people out of their pews and saying how dumb you are. We think freedom's important, because if it's not important for them, then it's not important for us.
This group may not be going into the churches of East Tennessee, but they've threatened lawsuits against UT, Lenoir City, Loudoun County Schools, Knox County Commission, and dozens more.
From the White House down to the principal's office, we've been fighting these battles.
Working out of a cramped office in downtown Madison, the group sent 728 complaint letters in the last 9 months over state church violations. 60 of those were to Tennessee.
We don't find these small communities. We don't go out looking. We've been accused of roaming the country looking for violations.
But that's exactly how many of the people here in East Tennessee feel.
When you have an organization that comes in from the outside, it looks like they're bullying, and I think that's what it is. It's a bullish tactic. They look for wins across the country, and some reason it just ended up in Lenore City.
But the Freedom From Religion Foundation disagrees.
We're not an outside group. We have members in every state.
One target is the prayer heard by thousands at UT football games.
So we'll play more. I don't know what was with the monks' music there.
Well, yeah. Well, it was showing our building. They went to our building, and then they started playing this Gregorian chant music.
But our headquarters are getting a little cramped, and I will agree with you on that. So we'll see. We'll keep you posted on what happens with our Knoxville complaint and more about that segment. And then we have, it's a little early. It's just past Halloween, and already FFRF is dealing with the annual December, quote-unquote, wars. There's no war on Christmas, but there is a war on separation of church and state in every December. And we have an ongoing major battle in Athens, Texas. That's Henderson County, where there's a courthouse display every year. And one whole side of it is a over life-size nativity scene. And we have been put through our paces by Henderson County, filling out forms to put up our own display, and they have denied it. And here's coverage.
We need to point out, by the way, before you hear this, that they use the word judge, but that refers to like a county
commissioner. Yeah, they just call their...
And listen to what this commissioner says about the purpose of their displays.
And this is KLTV7, Henderson County.
You might remember, last fall, the Henderson County Courthouse nativity scene gained national attention when the Freedom From Religion Foundation demanded the county take the display down or let them put up their own display.
Last December, this banner, paid for by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, was placed on the courthouse lawn. It read, "There are no gods and that religion is but myth." KLTV was the only station there when, just minutes later, Henderson County deputies took it down. Soon after, the Freedom From Religion Foundation started fighting to put it back up. A formal request to display the banner was submitted to the county earlier this year. This week, that request was officially denied.
We did not feel that the banner was consistent with the theme of Christmas and our decorations that we've enjoyed for many years here.
We did take into consideration what type of decoration or display they had to offer. Did they have alternative Christmas decorations or displays? And the response we got was no.
In a matter of weeks, the nativity scene will sit here in place of these pumpkins and hay bales. While the other three corners of the lawn will adorn secular decorations, the Freedom From Religion Foundation maintains that Henderson County is violating the Constitution.
We live under a secular and godless Constitution that requires that government should not take sides in matters of religion and personal conscience.
The foundation says they're not surprised the county denied their request, but they are disappointed.
When you look at our overall objective here, which is to make our courthouse square appealing, inviting to the public, you know, it was Judge Sanders' opinion at the end of the process to determine that the banner that they had offered did not accomplish that goal.
In Henderson County, Melanie Torrey, KLTV 7 News.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation says the display was brought to their attention by some of their members living in Henderson County. As to what happens next, the foundation says they are looking at all of their options.
So what's really happening is government censorship of our views. We actually did, to my great reluctance, offer a second set of wording that could be put up. You know, celebrate the winter solstice, the real reason for the season. Hardly controversial, and that was turned down too. And we have what makes the courthouse look appealing for the entire month of December is that one corner is dedicated to a devotional nativity display. And I have said it before, and I will say it again, I have never seen a creche or nativity scene that wasn't totally hokey and ugly. You know, these are not, aesthetically pleasing displays. These are devotional art. And
you heard what he said there, that the reason they turned us down is that our message is not consistent with the theme of Christmas. Well, in other words, they are a pro-Christmas agenda.
Well, we had to answer a series of questions on that, and that was one of the questions. How does this help Henderson County celebrate Christmas? And we had to respond, of course, our members don't celebrate Christmas, not in a religious sense. So the plot is thickening on that. We are, as they said, looking at all the options, but it really is government preference for Christianity over other religions and religion over non-religion.
And why doesn't the Attorney General of Texas go to bat for our free speech rights like you're going to bat for the free speech rights of the cheerleaders? Stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up, we'll be hearing from the FFRF film Champions of the First Amendment.
I'm Tony Clark from Winooski, Vermont, and I'm thrilled to be on Free Thought Radio. These are my people.
Welcome back to Radio as Godless as Our Constitution. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. Now we're going to play an excerpt of Champions of the First Amendment, which was the second film produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Came out in 1988, which was good timing because we had champions of the First Amendment alive and well to participate and be interviewed. And you're going to be hearing from Vashti Cromwell McCollum about her landmark 1948 lawsuit, which stopped evangelizing in the public schools through religious instruction.
After dark, a crowd of teenagers approached the door singing Onward Christian Soldiers and had a long poster, a board, and began banging it into our front door, which was a very substantial front door. But as I recall, it shook the house, but it was a rather scary situation. My mother opened the door to be greeted by a barrage of rotten vegetables and other debris. And my mother is not a person who cries much or prone to breaking down, but I think that experience really did lay her flat.
In the late 1940s, Vashti McCollum became a champion of the First Amendment and religious freedom. Concern for the welfare of her children, especially her oldest son, Jim, prompted her courageous legal fight against religious indoctrination in the public schools. This documentary is about religious freedom and about defenders of that freedom. It is the story of the McCollum family and two other champions of an unpopular cause, the constitutional right of non-believers to be free from state-sponsored religion.
We have three sons. When the oldest one was in the fourth grade, he ran into this program of religious education in the school, public school, on school time. He came home with a note from the teacher. We didn't approve of it. We thought that it was religious indoctrination. It was the sort of thing that shouldn't be in public schools. And also, we didn't want the religious training in any case. So we kept him out of the class until the peer pressure became so great. Even the public school teacher called and asked that we permit him to participate. Finally, we let him take the course for a few weeks. And we saw that it was pure and simple religious indoctrination. And so we took him out of the course. The pressure continued. And when it came to the point that we couldn't resist it, I took it to court.
Being the only child who didn't participate was a bit lonely and generated a great deal of hostility from the students and to some extent from the teachers. And the hardest part was being so isolated from everyone else. It seemed that I was just about the only one in the school that had nothing to do with the course and consequently had very little contact with anybody except certain teachers who were concerned about my well-being. But generally, it was just like being isolated from the community. Initially, they put me in the teacher's office in the first school I was at. And in the second school, they put me in a desk in the hall, which was generally used for detention purposes. When my mother complained, they placed me in the music room, which was also a place of detention and caused certain remarks from the teachers as they came by. But that was better than sitting in the hall.
It was an inconvenience to the school day and routine. But a more serious problem was that at the very outset, a religious census was conducted to find out what the population was, religiously speaking, and it segregated from the very outset on through the actual conduct of the classes, segregated people by their religious beliefs. No longer was it any secret whether you were Jewish or Catholic or, in our case, atheist. In terms of actually invading a essential public area, it definitely was a very, very un-American intrusion into the system. Unfortunately, the public, I think, started out confused and remained confused as to what my mother's contention really was. Her contention was that it was an unconstitutional violation of the separation of church and state for sectarian religious groups to come into the school and offer classes, especially on school time. The public, on the other hand, perceived this as an attack upon religion.
We had church services devoted to this discussion of this woman. And, of course, the children made it pretty hard on our boy that didn't take the course. There was a lot of publicity. Well, it just created a lot of furor in the community. Well, we had plenty of telephone calls all hours of the day and night, and I think sometimes after it seemed that Sunday evenings were the very worst, when they'd heard a good sermon that morning on the subject, and then they would go home and think it over. They'd call me and they'd give me the works about filing this case and objecting to their children having religion in the schools. And of course, I didn't mind their having religion for their children. It was a very good idea if that's what they wanted. It's just that I didn't want religion for my children, and if I did want it, I would have it on my own conditions, and that wasn't in the public school. We received an awful lot of correspondence. I tried to answer it all, but unfortunately, many of the anti-letters were not signed. The letters in favor of the action, well, they far outnumbered the antis, and they were well written, they were well thought out, and they would come at the rate of sometimes 100 a day.
We really were in a sort of a state of siege, and it often found its way as to the kind of ridicule that you would get from day to day with your classmates at school. Often you would hear a rumor that they were going to lay in wait for you on your way home from school, and you got a little creative as to how you picked your route home. There's no question that that kind of thing has an impact. Perhaps just as cutting would be the parents of your playmates, your friends, telling you that they didn't want you to play with their children. Vashti, at the time she filed suit, had been an instructor in the University of Illinois Department of Physical Education. At the time she filed suit, the reverberations immediately traveled to Springfield, where a legislator drafted a resolution that it was the sense of the legislature that atheists shouldn't be employed by the University of Illinois. He dropped the resolution when he was assured that Mrs. McCollum would not be rehired. There's no question that my mother bore resentment to the town forever after, partly because of the general prevailing hostility. The townspeople, the general community feeling was definitely hostile. But I think what actually was even more of a problem to her was that her friends in the university, people who were her colleagues, my father's colleagues, people who had expressed sympathy, backed away right after the suit was filed. When it became big news and controversial, people and allies evaporated very, very quickly, and I don't think she ever got over that. I like to say that the experience can be character building if you survive it. For myself, looking back on it, I see a lot of positive results. But from a child's point of view, this was not a preferred experience. It was not something that you could walk away from very easily. It was constantly with you. You were identified and marked. I remember my mother telling me that we had to be especially careful because everybody in town was watching what we did.
It's a strange thing, but no matter how difficult it seemed to be along the way, I don't believe I ever seriously considered giving up that case. When we had the decision from the circuit court And it was such a ridiculous decision. You'd have thought they'd never read the Constitution, let alone the state, the laws of Illinois. I just couldn't take that decision. So it was just natural to go to the Illinois Supreme Court. And at this point, we got a new attorney. Although he lost in the state Supreme Court, we knew we were on pretty good ground. There'd been a case decided by the U.S. Supreme Court the year before that seemed to bode well for us. That was the Everson case. So we went on to the United States Supreme Court, and I must say that all during these trials and tribulations, and they were quite a bit for a person that had never expected this sort of thing, we never seriously considered giving it up.
The United States Supreme Court decision in favor of the McCollums declared sectarian religious instruction in the public schools unconstitutional. The strong 8-1 decision was a resounding victory for separation of church and state.
The McCollum case legally was a very significant case. It is the first case decided by the United States Supreme Court that actually held the activity or action of a state municipality to be unconstitutional under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. Originally, the court in Barron versus Baltimore had held that the First Amendment of the Constitution did not apply to the states because the First Amendment starts out, Congress shall make no law respecting, and so forth. So consequently, it was not until after the Civil War that when the Civil War amendments were passed, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, that the sleeper in the 14th Amendment became available. And for us, it became available in our case when the Supreme Court held that the Due Process Clause included the Establishment of Religion Clause. This had been discussed in the Everson case the year before, but the McCollum case was the first case where an action was actually held to be unconstitutional under that particular provision. All the cases that have followed thereafter in the church-state area have been based primarily on the McCollum case and the language of the Everson case. This includes the Bible reading cases, the prayer cases, all of these cases that involve aid to public schools, or aid to parochial schools, and religious activities in the public schools.
We've been listening to Vashti Cromwell McCollum and Jim McCollum. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And stay tuned. We're going to hear from Roy Torcastle for the second part of Champions of the First Amendment.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And we're listening to FFRF's film, Champions of the First Amendment.
While the McCollum and Shemp cases have determined prevailing law against religion in the public schools, Torcastle versus Watkins is a unique affirmation of a related constitutional principle that there shall be no religious test for public office. Few would have predicted that something as simple as becoming a notary would result in another landmark Supreme Court decision. But that is what happened with Roy Torcastle, another champion of the First Amendment.
Well, this began as a result of a request from my employer to become a notary public in Montgomery County, Maryland. He operated a real estate business, and it would be convenient for him to have a notary in the office instead of having to go miles away to get a notary to put his official seal on documents relating to mortgages and loan applications and so forth. My application was submitted, it was approved, and I was instructed to go to the courthouse in Rockville, Maryland to get my commission. When I arrived there, the clerk of the court proceeded to read the oath of office, which I had never heard before. The first paragraph is a conventional pledge to support the Constitution, to obey the laws of the state, and diligently and faithfully, without partiality or prejudice, to execute the office of notary public. And the second paragraph, which offended me very greatly, states as follows: I, Roy R. Torcastle, do declare that I believe in the existence of God. This I could not accept. I do not believe in any form of the supernatural or any divinity. When I was told I could not be a notary, I went to the law library at the university where I had previously studied, and researched cases relating to the Office of Notary Public, I found absolutely nothing there that gave any clue that the state of Maryland had any right to intrude itself into my religious meditations. So I went back home and talked to a lawyer, a neighbor, friend, about this, and he agreed to take the case. We filed a suit for a writ of mandamus to compel the clerk of the court to issue the commission. I was defeated in the circuit court. We appealed to the Court of Appeals of the state of Maryland, which was the highest court in the state. I was defeated there, so we appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. And on the 19th day of June, 1961, the court rendered a unanimous verdict in my favor, a unanimous decision, I should say. And I think as a result of this, that freedom of religion is stronger in this nation today than it was prior to this litigation. I would like to read just one paragraph from the decision at the Supreme Court level. This decision, incidentally, was read by Justice Black. He says, "We repeat and again reaffirm that neither a state nor the federal government can constitutionally force a person to profess a belief or disbelief in any religion. Neither can constitutionally pass laws nor impose requirements which aid all religions as against non-believers. And neither can aid those religions based on a belief in the existence of God as against those religions founded on different beliefs." Soon after this case had been decided, I picked up a young man who was a student at the junior college near my home. And in our conversation, I learned that he was in the sociology department where a friend of mine was the professor. And the professor had discussed this case in their class. After some minutes of conversation, I identified myself as the plaintiff in this suit. And this young man was absolutely thrilled. When he got out of the car, he shook my hand most vigorously and said, "Mr. Torcaso, I'm so pleased to meet you. You're one of my minor heroes." I think that is just absolutely delightful.
Today, the right of freedom from religion is increasingly under attack.
I'm rather concerned about the situation today. There is a trend to the right, and I am afraid that if there are additional conservative appointees to the Supreme Court, the case law that was established from the McCollum case through the subsequent prayer and Bible reading cases could very easily be undone. And so I think people who are concerned about this issue have a great deal of concern. This issue is by no means a closed book. And I'm afraid that most of us, back when this case was decided in the very exciting 8 to 10 years that followed, felt that we had really gained a permanent victory. No victory is permanent in this business, and I think that perhaps there's greater threat to the Bill of Rights and the Establishment of Religion Clause than perhaps any time in this nation's history.
Well, there will be many more cases in the courts, and they will end up in the United States Supreme Court, I'm sure. I just hope that the decision in the McCollum case, which in the past has been the precedent, will prevail. Because if we have prayer in the public schools, whose prayer? And if we have tax credits for the families sending children to parochial schools, that money siphoned off the educational program, I see nothing but great harm to the public schools. Not only that, but I think that more and more the parents will elect to send their children to the more exclusive schools, which will be the religious schools. The children that can't make it will be, quote, dumped in the public school system. And you will no longer have the melting pot that we had that was so valuable in the United States, the service of the public schools. So I see nothing but disaster for the public school system if we have these practices prevailing. And I think that people will see this, will challenge it in the courts, and I hope that the McCollum case will prevail.
There can be no freedom of religion without the freedom to dissent. It was a victory for all Americans when Roy Torcaso, Ed Shemp, and Vashti McCollum fought and won court battles, ensuring the separation of church and state.
Religion and its implications, this sort of thing, has always been one of the least of my worries. I just have had a very happy life and a very fruitful life, and I get along with people, and they, generally speaking, get along with me. And religion is for the other guy, I guess, or at least organized religion. I'm a humanist, and I've enjoyed that philosophy. I felt satisfied with it, and I just don't feel the need for any organized supernatural religion, and never have.
And that is the FFRF film, Champions of the First Amendment, featuring Vashti McCollum and her sons, Dan and Jim, Roy Torcaso, and Ed Shemp, who we will play on a future show.
And gee, that voice was familiar, the narrator. That was you, Dan.
That was a 1988 Dan Barker. That's the end of our show. We want to thank our producer and our engineer, Dave McCann, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. You can find out more at ffrf.org/radio. You can listen to all the archives, and you can also sign up for the podcast.
Ask for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org, or you can phone 1-800-335-4021. Better yet, just join us at ffrf.org, and you'll support Free Thought Radio's broadcasts, our podcasts, become a member. You can support our important state church litigation and our four attorneys working to end violations without having to go to court. You can become part of the largest Free Thought Association in North America, and you can get a sample issue of Free Thought today. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.